On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory common ownership development. It is broadcast live from WEBR, Fairfax, Virginia. Join us as we explore the world of common ownership development, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American dream. Here on the Commons, I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining me on the Commons today is Bob Biederman. Bob split his month between Massachusetts and California, and so I really appreciate it. I know that you're a very busy man, so I appreciate your taking the time off to join us right here on the Commons today, Bob.
Well, Saturdays are always a good time for something like this.
Well, you don't want to relax and not do anything on a Saturday?
This is the most fun I can have.
Oh, good. Well, we are going to have fun because you and I both come from a little different aspect on this, and we're going to be discussing it. You're going to give us your views. I'm going to give you my views, and we should have a very fun show, I think.
Great.
So, all right, before we get started, I jotted down a number of things, and I put it out on the promo about you. Now, number one, and I didn't bring it with me, so you're going to have to help me out here, but number one, and the reason I know you is, well, actually, I was introduced to you by our mutual friend Steve Marcus, but you are the publisher of a magazine called Condo Management Magazine.
Yes, I am.
And you have two versions of it, is that correct?
Well, we have three.
Oh, you have three versions.
Yeah, New England, California, and Florida.
And it's a monthly magazine?
It is.
Okay, I have some of the Florida and I have some of the California. So, all right, well, three of them. You are busy. So that's why you sort of hop back and forth between California and Massachusetts, right?
Yep.
And you actually write a column.
Absolutely.
And when I get my copy, the first thing I do is go to a column called The Outsider.
Yeah.
And that's your column.
Yep.
And that's the first thing I always read, Bob.
Thank you.
I don't know why you call it The Outsider, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
You've also done other things. You've set up shows, condo shows.
We produced actually what turned out to be the largest trade shows for community associations in the country. We did that during the 80s and early 90s. We did it in New England. We published an anthology of resources for condominium board members and managers. We published an annual book called The Condominium Buyer's Guide. We did that for about 10 or 12 years. And that was basically an encyclopedia of every single community association that existed in the greater Boston, New England area, giving about 50 or 60 different facts and figures on them, everything from the square footage to the condo fee to the amenities and type of heating and things like that. And if there was something to do in the condos and HOAs, we try to make a dollar on it.
Well, okay. Now, that sounds like it would be interesting, but you know, you're talking about square footage and the type of heating and all of that. What about the real important stuff that would affect people's quality of life issues? And you know where I would come from that angle.
Well, if you're talking about the idea of the rules and regulations in almost everything that we've done, whether it be the Condominium Buyer's Guide or the Condominium Showcase or Condo Management Magazine, there's always the point of view that we try to give is that you've got to ask questions before you move into a community association. And there's two questions that are primary. One is to find out what the financial situation is in the condominium, and the second is to find out what the rules are, because both of those things have a huge impact on what happens the day after you move in and forever after. If the community association is in tough financial situation, it's going to cost you a lot more money than you anticipated, And if they've got 25 pages of rules and regulations, you better be comfortable with living in a restrictive community. Otherwise, no matter what your financial situation is, you'll lose your sanity.
Oh, I like the way you put that. But, you know, 25 pages is chump change today. We're looking at 300, 400, 500 pages in some
cases. No, I'm talking about the rules and regulations. You're not talking about 300 or 400 pages. You're talking, in most of the communities that I've seen, the rules and regulations will be 2 to 3 pages. And in some of the more restrictive communities, especially in Florida, I've seen rules and regulations that border on the 20 to 25 pages, but you may be thinking about the...
I'm thinking of the covenants, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all a bunch of legal stuff that I don't think there's one person in 1,000 that understands that. You're supposed to give it to your lawyer, and they pretend to look at it, but it's...
Yeah, but that's where the board derives its authority from. I mean, the rules and regulations, how often do boards exceed their power in adopting rules and regulations?
Well, in all of those pages that you're referring to, the 300 or 400 pages of the covenants, there's only a paragraph or two that talks about what powers the board members have, and it's a pretty... pretty simple thing to take a look at and understand. It's not complex at all. The 300 or 400 pages have more to do with real estate and legal other things and all kinds of things that nobody really cares about.
Well, those are your restrictions. That's why they're called covenants, conditions, and restrictions.
Well, I think you're probably getting to the point of talking about architectural controls, where if someone wants to put a balcony on their unit, or if they want to build a deck, or if they want to paint their door a different color, or if they want to plant petunias instead of daffodils, I think that's the area where you find most of the conflict coming up, where people run afoul of the, but those are rules. Those 300 or 400 pages gives the board the right to establish those rules. Those specific rules are not in necessarily the covenants and the restrictions and everything else. They're in the rule. When you go to buy and you ask for the rules, the rules and regulations of living in the community, they'll hand you anywhere from 3 to 20 pages on what those are. You'll also get the covenants in that 300 or 400 pages, but all the 300 or 400 pages does really is say that the board can decide to do whatever they want to do.
Bob, I don't think so. I don't think the board can do whatever it wants to do.
Well, no, what I'm saying is that the board can do whatever it wants to do according to the rules in that given state and what the state allows the board to do. I mean, some boards, there are restrictions on whether the board can put a special assessment in or how big of a special assessment. But that's the type of thing that would be, the thing to look at are the rules and regulations. The 300 to 400 pages, 98% of it is not relevant to your lifestyle that you're talking about.
Well, you know, actually, I think that the restrictions are there. That's what forms the basis of the contract. Now, and I haven't been around as long as you have, Bob, and I haven't looked at as many governing documents, but from what I've been able to determine, usually the CC&R say that the board has the right to adopt rules and regulations pertaining to the use of common areas.
Right.
Now, planting petunias on private, the number of petunias you can plant in your own private yard does not constitute what you can do on common area, yet boards routinely adopt rules and regulations that they don't have the authority to adopt.
Well, when you say routinely, I think I probably would just wonder at what that really means. It's difficult when you're dealing with what you have is a universe of hundreds of thousands of communities, and you say boards routinely adopt or exceed their authority.
When you made the comment earlier that a lot of the stuff that we see coming out has to do with the rules and regulations as defined in the governing documents. Mm-hmm. And what I'm saying is I'm not sure, that's pretty specific. That's pretty black and white.
Mm-hmm.
If the governing documents say you can't do something, you can't paint your house pink and purple, or you can only paint your house green, or whatever it is, I mean, there's no area for argument there. It's pretty clear. I think a lot of the issues happen when the boards decide to start interpreting those their way, or they come up with rules and regulations that they don't have the authority to adopt in the first place.
You're right, and that happens.
And homeowners don't even know that. They don't know where to go and look to determine whether that's a valid rule and regulation or not.
That's right. And what they usually have to do, and what they'll either call us or call an attorney or both, and when they realize it's going to cost them a couple of dollars to have their own private attorney research it, suddenly it's not so important anymore. But the point is, sure, I mean, that's the way it is here in America. You got a bunch of people that you elected to take care of your community, and you sit back, and they take care of the community. Now, if they abuse that power, which certainly happens, then it's up to you to do whatever you have to do to make it right. But the fact is, you delegated your authority to those people to run the community because you didn't want to worry about the lawn. You didn't want to worry about the paint or the insurance. And that's basically what you think when you move into a condo or a homeowner association, is it's going to be carefree. And the fact is that what you're doing is you're just delegating your responsibility to a bunch of people who you'd better trust. And if they abuse it, then it's up to you to make it right. And that's just the way it is.
But do people understand that when they buy into it? I mean, is that part of the information that you give out on some of, your trade shows and your condominium buyers guides?
Something that we give out, but that we're just the teeniest voice across the whole country. The people directly involved in the transferring of condominiums and homeowner associations are the brokers, and they're the last people that are going to say something like that because it could ruin their sale.
Absolutely. So we have a real problem here, don't we?
Well, it's America. You better know what you're buying, and you better protect yourself, and you have the right and the obligation to find out. If someone hides it from you, then that's against the law. If you ask a question and don't get the right answer, then you can sue whoever didn't give you the right answer, whether they did it on purpose or by mistake, but you have a recourse. But if you don't even ask the questions, then shame on you.
Well, how do you know what to ask? I mean, I bought into an association. I didn't even know what an association was. I came here from England. I lived in upstate New York for a while, for about a year. I moved to Arizona, no association, moved to Virginia. Mm-hmm. We bought a house, and someone says, oh, by the way, there's an association. What's that?
What? And didn't you ask?
I did. What's an association?
I bought my first condominium in 1973, and I said, what the heck is this? And I asked questions, and I found out, and I got the answers.
Well, the answers I got.
Are we supposed to protect the people who are too lazy to even ask? I mean, don't we have a basic responsibility here, if you're buying a home, to find out these things?
We had bought it, and, this was not our first home, and there had nothing had been attached to our prior home that we had bought. It was only after we had a ratified contract that the agent said, oh, by the way, there is an association. Well, what is an association?
Right, exactly. And if you don't ask the question, you're not going to get the answer.
Here's the answer that I got, Bob. The answer I got was, well, it's a group of people who will pick up the trash for a certain dollar amount. You know, you have to pay them so much a month. Mm-hmm. And in return for that, what you will get is trash removal and snow removal.
Mm-hmm.
Having moved here from Arizona where it didn't snow, having somebody remove the snow for me sounded really great. Well, yeah. I didn't know that snow removal didn't amount to much, but, But, I mean, that was the only answer I got. That was it. So we got to the settlement. I asked the attorney, what is an association? Why am I being assessed this extra money? What is it for? To pick up your trash, remove the snow. That was it. Where did, at the time, and this was back in 1980 when associations weren't that big, but where does one go to get that information from? How does one research it? Now we're getting more information out there. But where do people go to get this?
Well, what is it that you would like to have, what would you have those people have said to you that would have done a better job?
Well, I think if I'd been given a copy of the covenants and told, look, there are certain things that by buying in here,
you're telling me that you bought into an association and you did not get a copy of the CC&Rs?
That's right.
Well, that's, in my understanding, in the areas, the geography that I work, that's illegal.
Now it is, but back in 1980, it wasn't.
Well, do you want to talk about 1980, or do you want to talk about now?
I'm going to talk about now, but I'm also going to tell you that as a former agent, and I know this happens quite often, quite often agents forget to pick up the covenants. And what happens when they get to the settlement, the attorney will cover for them. Here, sign here that you received it. And they're getting it at settlement.
You're absolutely right, at least in spirit, if not in specific fact, because that is the truth, that whoever buys into a community association, nobody, I mean nobody, is going to pour through those 50, 100, 200 pages. It's just not going to happen. You hand it over to your lawyer. That's what you figure you pay your lawyer for. And you still don't know what the answers are. So whether it was in 1980 where you didn't get them at all, or the year 2002 where you got them but didn't read them, the end result is the same. You just bought into something you had no idea about.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And you end up, and it's getting much more complex because now you, in addition to the governing documents, you have state statutes that sort of empower associations even beyond where where associations reserve their rights there, mm-hmm. if you will. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
I think one of the things that is often misunderstood, and it's not just in associations, but community associations are not a democracy at all.
Thank you for saying that.
you elect it's a Republican form of government where you elect people to do a job. And they do it. They don't have to consult you on every decision they make. You trust that they're going to make the right decision for almost everything. I say almost everything. There are certain things that they do have to go back to the community for to get a vote of approval of the community to do certain things. But most of the time, you're giving them your trust and saying, go ahead and do the job, and you got to hope for the best. And as I said before, if you don't get what you want, then it's up to you to do something about it.
Carefree living, huh?
It's the reality.
Carefree living, Bob, right? you've got to watch them. You've got to watch. And look, I'm not going to say that not all boards are bad and not all board members who get on there have got bad intentions, because they don't.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm talking about a system where you're sort of stuck with a neighbor who says, yeah, all right, nobody else wants to do this, therefore I will.
Exactly.
And they may be the nicest person on earth, but they don't know beans about what they're doing.
Right.
And they have a tremendous influence on your life and your wallet.
Yep. You're right.
And this is what it means to buy into an association.
Mm-hmm.
And you could get stuck with it. Well, that's the end of the show, then we agree.
I lived in a condominium for 12 years. I would never, by choice, live in a condominium again, because I personally don't fit into that kind of lifestyle. But that's a decision that each one of us has to make. I still have a great deal of respect for the people who live and work and in condominiums and volunteer for the board, because 99% of them are really they're either selfless people that are giving to their community, or they just have no clue what they got themselves into when they sit at the board meetings and keep quiet and just count the days till their term is over.
And some of them are real martinets.
Well, and there are a couple that are crazy, and they just are. They just absolutely, they've really become intoxicated with this power, and they have no clue as to what to do with it, and they get us all into trouble. But they're really the minority that makes the most noise and causes some horrendous problems. I mean, I listen to several of your shows, and so many of them focus on those people. I mean, you look at that situation down in Jupiter, Florida with the flag. How absurd. I mean, that's... It's just the absurdity of it was overwhelming.
Well,
the absurdity of most of these situations are.
I'm really glad you raised that, Bob, because would you believe that even today that there's a development at Shelton, Connecticut, is going after some homeowners for flying a flag, an American flag?
I believe absolutely anything, yeah.
And they're upset with the local radio station, believe it or not, because WWYZ-FM went to Shelton last week and collected money to pay the fines that were being imposed by the association for flying the American flag.
Yeah, yeah.
For God's sake, when do these people learn, or do they ever
learn? They get it? I mean, it's... when you have hundreds of thousands of people involved in doing this, odds are you're going to find one or two or even five or ten that are just nuts. And that's the reality.
But my guess is, okay, my guess is that nowhere in the governing documents does it say you may not fly an American flag.
No, it gives you broader powers that you can interpret or misinterpret
okay,
into that, as making that as a rule, despite what Mr. Bush, or our president, has said, and a lot of other equally self-serving public officials have tried to do in making it illegal to restrict the flying of the flag, people just don't care. Again, you're talking about that minority that just don't get it. They just have their own neurotic agendas, and they go about making life miserable for everybody around them. I wish there was a stupid law. I wish there was a law that says, okay, you're guilty of being stupid, and you're going to go to jail or pay a fine, and you know, most of these people would disappear.
Well, this particular association has identified 6 days, including 9/11, where the American flag may be flown, but, you know,
my interpretation of the law is that's illegal. I think it was pretty clear that the federal law takes precedence over state law and over community association rules. And as far as I understand, what Bush said was that you cannot restrict the flying of the flag.
That was what, Jeb Bush or George Bush?
No, that was George. W.
But did he put it in writing and sign it?
Yeah, I think he did.
Do you?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did. And then his brother reinforced it down in Florida for this guy in Jupiter. But again, it didn't matter to these people who just decided they didn't care.
Jupiter's still going on, despite the fact that Jeb Bush signed something and made it retroactive.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know,
I'm well aware of it, I promise you.
The association.
I'm well aware of it. Those people ought to be, you know, put in a rest home someplace and, you know, just put on their Prozac or whatever it is, because they're totally out of touch with reality.
But, you know, you wrote an outsider column about that.
I did. As a matter of fact, I took a kind of an interesting point of view that really had not much at all to do with the issue, because I thought the issue was absurd. If you're referring to the column where I was concerned about the credibility of the guy flying the flag, is that what you're talking about?
And you specifically wrote about George Andrus. But you came down on the association side.
Oh, I don't think I came down on any
Florida flag waiver, not what he seems.
I think I was more anti the guy flying the flag than I was pro-association. That would be my sense.
Although my words,
I guess, are open to interpretation, but I know what I felt when I wrote it, and I was just outraged at this guy. And I didn't really care about the association. They were just, you know, the usual bunch of neurotic people trying to do what they thought was right.
Well, I'm not a lover of rules. I frequently see board members intoxicated with their own self-importance,
mm-hmm.
using a sledgehammer to swat a gnat mm-hmm. of a rules infraction. I think that kind of activity is the bane of the community association industry.
Yep.
Continued on page K.
But that doesn't sound like I'm in favor of the board, does it?
The idea that the person would wrap himself in the American flag over a bogus rules issue is anathema. I don't believe this is about the right to fly the American flag at all. It's about an individual who seems to be in love with a flagpole, or maybe just the idea of sticking it to the board from which he was removed.
Yes, exactly. That's what I think that was about.
I don't. I've spoken to him a lot.
I've spoken to him, too, and I also spoke to the people around him. And he was fairly inconsistent in his actions, and it sounded to me like number one, I have a big problem with people somehow giving incorrect information about their military service. I just take huge offense at that. And once that was proven that he had claimed certain things about his military service that weren't true, then I got to tell you, I went looking for more, and I found more that showed some inconsistency. This guy, as far as I was concerned, this was not a guy filled with integrity who was out being a hero to all the veterans. He was a guy who was sticking it to the association. And it's not that the association didn't deserve getting it stuck to, but I had no sympathy for this guy and have no sympathy for this guy whatsoever.
Well, no, actually, he did not do anything wrong. I don't know. Well, you're in the press, so you should know. But sometimes you get caught on something. A member of the media, a reporter, will misquote you or come up with their own interpretation of something, and that gets picked up.
He said he was part of he was in the Korean War. He wasn't.
No, he wasn't. He always said he wasn't. He came on the show.
He always said he wasn't. He did say he let that go to print, and there was no denial, no retraction whatsoever.
He did.
He floated on that until someone pointed out that, hey, this doesn't work.
He came on the show right at the very beginning. He came on my show right at the very beginning, and he said, no, I was not in Korea. I was in Korea for a few days, but not during the Korean War. And I told the media that, and they insist on printing that I'm a Korean War veteran. it was not something that he tried to do. I mean, he always said, I'm 61 or whatever it was, and people could do the math themselves.
Right.
It wasn't something that he went out intentionally and tried to do. I think he took the blame. You know, maybe he's not 100% perfect, but let's not blame him for something that really isn't his fault. But, you know, the thing too, Bob, is that with that particular instance, and here we go back to what we were talking about earlier, there was nothing in the governing documents that said you cannot fly a flag from a flagpole.
You're right.
And so the board decided.
Yeah, the board made a foolish decision. They made a foolish interpretation, and then they dug their heels in, and as some foolish people do, and wouldn't admit their mistake. Sure, that's got to be, you know, a major part of the problem, but it wasn't the only part. As far as I was concerned, and what I was trying to do in that column was take a little bit of an oblique angle. Everybody in the world was coming down on the obvious, that it was absurd for a community association to get involved in this kind of legal problem. And what I was trying to do was just take a different point of view and say, who's this guy anyway? And I certainly was not supporting the board. And the words you wrote there, the words that you read that I wrote, could never be interpreted as being complimentary to the board.
No, I didn't even highlight any of that. I mean, I hadn't planned on talking to you about that. I just pulled it out right now. I wasn't sure. I've come with a stack of your magazines, Bob. I have about eight of them. See, I hang on to this stuff. I keep it because there's a lot of good information. Actually, there is a lot of good information in here.
I hope so.
It's a very interesting magazine. It is designed for the industry, though.
Well, it's designed for the board members. Very, very specifically, the purpose of what we do each month is to teach board members the very basics they have to know about whether it's buying insurance or maintenance or landscaping or any aspect of the law specifically, rules enforcement, budgeting, so that they know enough to ask their professional manager the right questions so that the team can come to the right decision. I think one of the biggest problems that we have in the industry is you have someone who's never had done a budget, never managed any property, is a volunteer now responsible for a property that's worth $10 million and doesn't have a clue as to what they're supposed to do, and they have a fiduciary responsibility, which means they're handling other people's money. And all we're trying to do is to teach them the right questions to ask so that they and their professional property manager can get to the right decision. And that's the total mission of the magazine.
Well, the magazine also, you know, how can people get a hold of you? Because we're coming up to where we're going to be taking a break here in a couple of minutes. But how can people get a hold of you?
Well, probably the easiest way in this wonderful world of technology is the wonderful email. You can get me you can get me directly. Well, the magazine is probably the easiest. It's editor@condomgmt.com.
So it's condomgmt.
Right. M as in Mary, G as in George, M as in Mary, T as in Thomas. condomgmt.com. editor@condomgmt.com, and you can ask me anything or look for some information. We have particularly good information about the northeastern part of the United States, Florida and California. I'm really not much help in the central part of the country. I know a few people there, but we don't have much experience with the local laws and regulations outside the areas that we really specialize in. They're not that different usually, but I would be reluctant to give a whole lot of advice other than to just give people's names to call in those other areas.
And do you have a website?
Yeah, it's you know better than I. What is it? Condo MGMT?
Yeah, www.condomgmt.com.
Right,
it's so nice to have my guests come on and give out their information here.
I'm not a big fan of technology and that sort of thing. I prefer writing.
Well, you write very well, and there's always a column. Sometimes I cheer you, and sometimes I don't. I'll tell you, my favorite columns are the ones that have absolutely nothing to do with homeowners associations.
Oh, thank you. I enjoy those columns. I get really tired of this boring stuff.
Yeah, my favorite had to do with when you went to Arizona State University for your son's graduation.
Oh, you know how many letters I got about that? Isn't that strange that you would say that? Yeah.
Really?
A moving experience.
Well, yeah, I used to live in Arizona. My husband went to ASU as well.
Yeah.
And that sort of puts you more in the human realm.
Unbelievable, isn't it? I was hoping you were going to ask me how The Outsider came to be. I'm sitting here very patiently, but I don't know how much longer I can wait.
And, oh, well, tell you what. Why don't we take over? All right, how long is it going to take you to?
Because
we
seconds.
Are... Huh?
I was trying to help the folks at National CAI get themselves out of a mess 20 years ago. And the one of the people, it was Cliff Treese, as a matter of fact. Maybe he'll sue me. Cliff Treese said, no, we're not going to work with you. We don't want to work with any outsiders. This is after I had recruited more people for the organization in the Northeast area than anybody ever had in history, had basically funded the New England chapter and helped its growth. And this guy named Cliff Treese tells me he doesn't want to work with me because I'm an outsider. And I threw all the damn plaques they had given me, five of those bronze plaques. I threw them down on the damn table, and I said, here, take your damn plaques. From now on, I'll be the outsider.
Oh, I love it.
I have great love for the folks at National CAI and their intuitive sense of working with people.
Well, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about that because you devoted a couple of issues to CAI.
Oh, I can hardly wait.
Oh, good. All right. Well, don't go away because we'll be right back.
Bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs. Life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and on the Commons with me today is Bob Biederman, editor and publisher of Condo Management Magazine. I did not know there were three of them, but there are three of them, so he is even busier than I thought he was. Bob, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about CAI, but before we do that, I've got a couple of quick announcements to make here and a couple of letters to read. First of all, if you live in Fairfax County, Virginia, the Fairfax County Department of Family Services is looking for loving, caring adults who are interested in becoming foster or adoptive parents. If you're interested, if you have room in your hearts and your homes and you want to help these kids who need you, please call Fairfax County Department of Family Services at 703-324-7639. I know we don't normally do things like this, but I get a lot of press releases, and that was one that really touched my heart. Okay, from Rich Craig in San Antonio. I'm not going to read you the whole thing. It says, Godspeed you, and everyone who knows the true meaning of a developer-created regime, could you please tell everyone to wish happy birthday to my two-year-old website? It was first announced on your show 2 years ago this month. It's now captured over 6,000 different IP addresses from which it was read, and gets about 20 new hits a day. Just two more years, I predict a major catastrophe for HOA Empire 2 years ago in May. Bet you a dollar. Sell more to more. Sell, sell, sell. Anyway, happy birthday to Rich's website. You can access it at http://. There is no www, so don't do the www bit, but go straight to home.satx.rr.com/cdma/SOPOARESPONSE.htm. And Rich, my suggestion to you is get an easier website address so we can read it. Bob, I only have one phone line, so we can't get people calling in. And I know that this drives people nuts because they really want to talk to you. And sometimes people will take the time before they know what we're going to talk about to actually send out questions by email. I've got one today, and it's, "Dear Mr. Biederman, in the state of North Carolina, powerful legislation has recently been passed allowing board members to fine and foreclose against homeowners at their own good judgment. Board members are now being educated by property managers and industry lawyers on these new powers, and as a result, homeowners are beginning to lose their homes at an alarming rate. As you are well aware, lack of consumer protection is now a common property for home buyers throughout this country. What is the best way for homeowners to reclaim their liberty and pocketbooks from not only industry-trained board members, but also our various state legislators that have so easily succumbed to industry influence?"
And the answer is?
Buy carefree living, right?
Well, I think just to make it simple, there were a lot of words there. I think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I think the person's asking, how do you protect your home from board members who are out of control and want to foreclose? Would that be the essence of what he's asking?
Well, I think the whole thing is that they're trained by CAI. A lot of these board members, yes, some of them are whacked out, but you also have some who don't know what they're doing, and they're the ones who are being basically trained by the industry to do this, whether it's the attorney or management or whoever.
Let me make it a little simpler. Number one, CAI is a separate issue entirely, and we can jump right into that whenever you're ready. But as far as this question goes, let me just try to separate the fertilizer from the reality here. What the board can do is they can fine you, and they can fine you whether they have the legal right to or not, because that's, again, I get tired of saying it, but that's America. You can do what you want until someone says you can't and brings a lawyer to prove that. So when the board fines you for something that's ridiculous and they don't have the power to do, your response should be, number one, pay the fine and then sue them if you have the courage to do that. Because what happens is they do have the right to fine you most often if you don't. And that's pretty clear, that they do have the right to fine you. Now, if they fine you for something that they were wrong in the first place on, then you'll get your judgment in the end. But if they fine you and you don't pay that fine, just like any bill, whether it's your water bill, your condo fee, or just a bill at Sears and Roebuck, someone can go to court, get a judgment against you, and then do whatever they have to do, up to and including foreclosing on your home, to fulfill that judgment. The connection between the fine and the foreclosure has really not much to do with the issues that we really want to deal with. The foreclosure is a way to collect a debt. And the fact that these boards are fining people unreasonably, according to you, and in many cases that I've seen, unreasonably, according to me as well, the issue here is stop it at the pass, pay the damn fine, and then fight them.
Okay, did you hear last week's show, Bob?
You asked me to check on the website. I'm sorry, I did not have the chance to listen to it. I'm sorry.
I had Frank Short, an attorney, who came on. He's a friend of mine, and we went through two court cases. One in Virginia, and the Gilman case, and the other one. In fact, it's still on the website, and if you want to download it right after you get off the air, you can, because it's going to take me a couple of hours to upload this one. And the other one is Foley. Out of Rhode Island, and in both instances, fines were considered to be, the courts found fining to be unconstitutional. In some cases, it's an unconstitutional delegation of sovereign power, and in the Rhode Island instance, it was an unconstitutional delegation of police power, and they found the statute empowering associations to fine to be unconstitutional. So your assertion that they have the right to fine you, they don't necessarily.
Well, what you're doing is you're citing two court cases where judges made a decision, and now you're saying that that's the law. I would suggest to you, I wish it was, but the fact is that two isolated instances, I would guess that unless that was an appellate decision, it probably doesn't have a whole lot of teeth other than what case law has. And if it was an appellate decision, it could probably go to the Supreme Court State Supreme Court before it's really in place. But what you really don't want to be misleading your listeners and now thinking because they heard it on your show
that it's illegal
to sign, because that's not fair.
It's unconstitutional. It's not illegal. It's unconstitutional.
Well, in my mind, again, I'm being simplistic, the same thing. Don't be saying that here on the radio, because what you're going to do is you're going to incite a lot of people to say, hey, I heard it on the radio, you can't find me, and they're going to get themselves into a lot of trouble.
Okay, what I'm telling people is to get the cases. In fact, both cases are uploaded on my website, so you can take them down. One of them is a Virginia Supreme Court decision, and the other one was a decision on remand from the appellate level in Rhode Island. So, yeah.
What impact do you think that's going to have in Florida and California?
It's not going to have any impact, except that two courts have found it to be unconstitutional, and if anybody's going to court, if anybody's being fined and wants to challenge it, guys, get the cases. The arguments have been laid out for you, and listen to last week's show, because Frank did an outstanding job of laying it all out step by step.
I'm not going to question his logic or the rationale, because he was probably wonderfully intelligent and intuitive and made a great case for what I wouldn't argue with being a good thing. All I'm pointing out is that from a practical point of view, take a look at the laws on marijuana. There are six states now, including California being one of them, where everybody says the state says it's legal, but the federal government is coming in and cutting people off to jail.
Federal government's not saying to homeowner associations, you can go ahead and fine.
You've got to be very careful if you're going to influence someone to go ahead and break what apparently is a law and is constitutional in most of the states. If these two cases exist, and I don't question for a second that they do, and it's wonderful that they got those decisions, but boy, you don't want to be inciting people to go out and turn their back on fines, because that's what's going to result in a lot of people losing their homes.
Oh, no. Don't, please, if you're being fined, don't take it lightly. This is very serious, because you can lose your home.
No, I'm not being funny at all.
I'm talking to my listeners. Don't ever ignore anything from the association. Don't ever, even if they're wrong, go ahead and pay it. But if you're going to go to court to fight a fine, go to my website and download those two cases.
Absolutely.
Because the arguments have been made for you, and they've both been made on constitutional grounds.
And turn it over to your attorneys and let them do the fight.
Absolutely.
And hope you can get your attorney's fees back when you go to court.
Absolutely. But check it out, Bob.
I will, definitely.
You will. Okay. CAI. We're running out of time here, but CAI, you've got two issues here, and you've been very critical of CAI.
Well, yeah, I think it's constructive, healthy criticism. They don't.
They don't find it very...
No, they don't at all. If you look askance at CAI, you're branded a traitor or, worse, an outsider.
Well, the outsider here wrote in one of the issues of condo management, we lost 3,000 members last year. 3,000 individuals or groups decided that after at least one full year's membership, CAI wasn't worth it. That represents 17% of your members, right?
Yeah, you didn't finish it, because we lost about that much for the past 5 years. And the point of the article was, if people weren't out there recruiting like crazy, getting new blood in, we wouldn't have anybody left.
So everybody's
leaving.
Because
too many people are leaving. They're coming in and leaving.
Why?
Because they're not getting perceived value. That's why. They're paying their $200, $300, or $400 a year for their dues. They're getting six issues of a national magazine, which has some level of entertainment value, I guess, but from my own point of view, not a heck of a lot more. And the real value of CAI, and it's a very, very significant value, is the local chapter value. What the people in your local neighborhood chapter can do to help you, whether they be managers, other board members, lawyers, whatever, town officials, that's where the value of CAI is. It's on the very local level. The national organization is, they acknowledge themselves, it's perceived as worthless. There is no perceived value to the national organization. And their response to that was to spend a few $1,000 on a little four-page brochure, mail it out to all their members saying, gee, we're really good people, you should value us. Rather than doing something of value, they just butted it over with a brochure. But the problem with CAI is that from a national point of view, there's no perceived value to the national organization. All of the value, and there is significant value, is on the local level. And it varies from chapter to chapter to chapter, and there are over 50 of them across the country. And boy, they're so different depending on which one you go to.
Well, I mean, I'm hearing from people who apparently are somewhat dissatisfied, even at the chapter level, because there's an inner circle and the people who do join. Now, okay, wait a minute, Bob. Let's tie this up. You've lost 3,000 members, but that includes chapter members, right?
That includes what?
The chapter members, the people who sign up.
Oh, yeah, everybody who belongs to a chapter. Well, yeah, there are 3,000 people who signed up that year that decided they weren't going to renew. They did not get the value. And I think what I was trying to say is that each chapter has different levels of value. I would tell you that in Florida there are, I think, 7 or 9 chapters. And boy, what a difference from the Central Florida chapter to the Fort Lauderdale chapter to the Gulf Coast chapter. I mean, tremendous difference in value from what you get. I mean, and I don't want to hurt any one of the local chapters, but boy, some of them are worth absolutely nothing. I mean, zero. And others are an incredible value. I think that the chapter in New England is probably the most valuable experience that any association homeowner or board member could have. It's an amazing resource of intelligent people that care about what's going on. The New Jersey chapter is the same way. The Orange County, California chapter is the same way. The San Diego chapter is very similar. The Los Angeles chapter is just about out of business. They closed the Miami chapter, if you can believe that. Think about how many condos are involved in the Miami area and in the L.A. area, and CAI just about closed those chapters because they couldn't operate. No, so you see, there's no way of knowing what you can't. It's tough to say on a chapter level to make broad statements because they're all dramatically different, dramatically different. I mean, some are just essential to the well-being of the community association industry, essential. And there are others that are just a waste of time.
Well, this is the December 2001 California issue that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the interview that you did with Barbara Bard Keenan.
Yeah, that was a great one.
It was very good. And you had a lot of memos and articles and letters from a number of top CAI people.
Yeah.
Joe West,
the founders,
Steve Mark,
the very founders of the organization. Yeah.
Link Cummings was in here. Steve, Carol Sappington.
Yeah. Every one of those people are nationally recognized with national credentials beyond any question.
And yet all of them are complaining about CAI.
That's right.
And they were, so Barbara Bird Keenan actually resigned?
You know, when people leave a post after a certain number of years, very frequently there's a question as to who was the motivating force, whether it was the individual leaving or the organization. And the fact of the matter is, yes, she did resign.
She did resign. She had been there for,
10 years.
She was making, according to your article, $250,000.
She was making more than the President of the United States.
Wow.
For running an organization that was losing members by the fistful. And at its height, had only 15,000 members. She was, can you talk about breaking through the glass ceiling? I have more admiration for Barbara Bird Keenan than I have for any other person involved in CAI. She took that organization and did just what she wanted to do. She's an amazing, amazingly talented person. Can you imagine making more than the President of the United States running CAI? I mean, really?
Well,
she knew what she was doing, and she made some remarkably valuable contributions to the organization during the 10 years. Unfortunately, the last 4 or 5 years, from my point of view, weren't so good.
When she took over the helm at CAI, things were not going very well then.
No, they're in the same situation as they are now. They had just ousted their founding executive director because it had just grown out of his grasp, and they were in desperate financial situation, and he had not made that as well known as maybe he could have. And that was very upsetting to people when they found out, and everybody went around and we got together a war chest of $300,000 worth of contributions to keep the organization afloat. And then Barbara Bird Keenan came along and did a great job. I mean, seriously, a great job for 5 years, pulling everything together and being very polarizing. She's definitely an individual who knows what she wants to do and gets it done. And then this is my interpretation, she realized nobody out there really cared, so she says, okay, we get this organization back on its feet, now let's take care of BBK. And the salary went up, the staff doubled and tripled, and the organization just financially went back to what I think is, and it's difficult to tell, but even a worse situation than it was when she took over, and membership was just falling away. And it's, you know, she had a very interesting tenure. She certainly is a person to be reckoned with. Certainly a very intelligent, shrewd, intuitive person.
Well, by all accounts, she did turn things around, but then she let everything slip through her fingers again.
Yeah, she turned it around 360. She did a 180 in the first 5 years and got everything back on track, and then did another 180 the next 5 years.
And took it back to where she picked it up.
That's my interpretation of it. That's what I see when I look at the membership numbers. That's what I see when I look at the financial numbers. I just got to take my hat off to her for putting number one. Number one, she took care of herself.
Okay, now you made the comment just a second ago here that the reason she sort of let things slide was because no one out there cared.
Right.
So I guess none of the members really cared. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. She's staffed. She's in there in her office in Washington doing what she wants to do. The only oversight she has is from an impotent board of trustees that has no power to do anything except come to meetings, and they can't even do that.
Sounds like a homeowners association, Bob.
Pardon me?
Sounds just like a homeowners association.
That's an interesting thing, because CAI is an exact mirror of the industry that they reflect. You've got a bunch of volunteers on the national level, elected to national office, to sit around the table. I got to think of a polite way to say this. Making themselves feel good about how important they are.
Well, it sounds like a homeowner's
association. It's exactly that. They mirror the people that they serve. They mirror their constituency. They're in office for a year or so. They do very little, if anything. They talk a lot about what they're going to do and have all these great high-sounding phrases, but don't do anything. And they, in fact, stand in the way of progress frequently. And I've been involved in trying to help them myself directly. And I was just blown away by their inability to get out of their own way to get something done. I mean,
why do you belong to CAI?
Pardon me?
I said, why do you belong to CAI?
It
sounds like an absolute disaster.
My choice is to try, despite the outsider label, to try to work from within, because to try to form another organization would not make any sense.
Why do you need another organization?
Another organization to deal with the same constituency that CAI does. But the fact is, the organization was founded on great principles. If we only listened to the message and the mission of the organization as it was originally conceived and did that, it would be terrific, and I still cling to that and hope that someday we'll get some people on the executive level that will remember that and acknowledge it.
The original mission.
Take a look at where all the past presidents of CAI are. They fled. They have nothing to do with the organization. You look at 80% of the presidents, past presidents of CAI National, and see what their involvement with the organization is now. And it is zero. It's less than zero.
Byron Hanke was very critical of CAI in the last days. But I talked to Byron Hanke before he died, and the purpose for CAI initially was to help the developers who were afraid, because they kept calling Hanke saying, hey, what are we going to do? There's more of them, meaning the homeowners, than there are of us. If we keep putting all these restrictions on homeownership, they're not going to like it.
That's very close to my interpretation. My interpretation, understanding of the reason it was formed is to get everybody together involved in the process in the same room. The developers, the public officials, the professional managers, the lawyers and the vendors, and the homeowners. Get them all together
members.
In the same room, have them all have equal value and equal authority, and discuss things and try to work things out in on a common ground opportunity, a round table where everybody in the industry is involved and can have an equal voice.
But everybody
what it was founded on, and it's gotten away from that.
But everybody doesn't have an equal voice. Certainly the homeowners, the 50 million homeowners.
Who should have the biggest voice if you're going to...
The clients.
They have nothing.
The
very,
clients.
Very little influence at all.
The clients.
Right.
The clients.
They're the people that it should be formed for. They're the people... I mean, you have millions and millions of homeowners, and you have thousands of vendors, and it's the thousands of vendors that control the organization.
Talk about the tail wagging the dog, huh?
It's not even a tail. It's a wart on the tail.
It's a wart on the tail.
It really is. I mean, it's absurd. But the fact of the matter is, again, it's America. These are the people who are taking the time to get involved. The lawyers run many of the chapters. The professional managers run many of the other chapters, because they're the ones that put the time in, because their livelihood depends on it.
Maybe
there's nothing wrong with that.
Maybe we ought to have you back and talk about nothing but CAI one of these days. Because
you try that and see what happens to your radio station.
It'll get jammed.
Well, you'll have more of these CAI lawyers. Did you know what happened when they went on 2020 with the barrage of lawyers that...
Oh, I know. They threatened ABC.
It was a joke. You say you're going to have me on again. You'll see what kind of response you get from the CAI lawyers.
I've had CAI lawyers on before, and I'll have them on again.
Well, Steve Marcus isn't really a CAI lawyer.
Well, no, I've had others on. I've had Bob Diamond on. I've had Wayne Hyatt on. I've had Mark Perlstein on. Mm-hmm. I've had a number of them on.
Very different group there. Very different people, if you mentioned. Very, very different, each of them.
Okay. Yeah, they are. But anyway, we're out of time, and I really want to thank you, Bob. You've done a dynamite job and a great show. And
well, if you want to get together again and talk about something specific and just beat it to death, I'd be happy to.
Sounds great. I can't think of anyone I'd rather beat something to death with than you. We have a great rapport here. But I'm going to have to get off the air here.
Okay.
But thank you. And thanks for everybody for hanging out with me today. Please plan on joining me and my guests on the Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 Eastern Time.